Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Hello and welcome to the Build Up here on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes, our weekly podcast where we get you hyped for the sporting weekend. And Mick, I'll tell you what, we're coming off the back of one of the best weekends of the year. Every week I kind of half jokingly said this is going to be the biggest weekend of sport in the year, and do you know what, it does actually get better and better. Last weekend was brilliant. We had shocks aplenty. Alright, most of our predictions went in the toilet straight away, but that's the wonder of sport. I mean, South Africa beat
the wonder of our show anyway.
Yes. South Africa beating England in the World Cup final, to be fair, nobody would have predicted that. The boxing, we talked to Jason Quigley last week. He had got us hyped for the Katie Taylor fight, more though about the occasion and the fact that she was going to do it, but the fight itself turned out to be great. Even the Anthony Crolla fight, he went the distance. The chap that he was fighting
I think I seen him at a festival in 2002.
And then Canelo Alvarez later on in the middle of the night as well, knocked, got an 11th round knockout,
a win finally.
Jason Quigley had said
Jason Quigley saved the show last week.
So we had a massive weekend of GA action, the women's hockey team, obviously. So many penalty shootouts
finish it as well. Like, I mean, I did something I don't generally do on a Sunday evening, and I turned off the NFL for a good hour so I could watch the women's hockey, and that shootout was as drama filled as sport can possibly get. To go from, you know, the cliche of like snapping victory from the jaws of defeat, they were beaten, they had the same three in a row and score all of theirs, it just been completely gone. Oh my god, it was unbelievable.
And the other thing was, it was the third penalty shootout of the day, or penalty shuttles as they like to call them, but you had Derry Gonnelly and Trillick going to penalties. You had, as Finchie, as we all said, the FAI Cup final, the one thing we always know about the FAI always Cup final, that it goes to extra time at least.
He also predicted
no goals in the first half and both teams to score in the second half. Both of those came off as well.
Yeah.
It was an incredible finish, and it was just a mad weekend of sport. This weekend, little.
And by the way, that's like, even the rugby thing, who would have predicted it? Like, that South Africa would win, absolutely. But it was actually a great match as well. It was great to watch, which definitely nobody would have predicted, given the way South Africa played in the semi-final. So, like, South Africa played all the rugby. And we got the Colby try that everybody's been waiting for, where he did it. Like, he proved exactly why people have been talking about him all year. So, considering we're going lightish on the rugby this week, as in we're going to talk a little bit about it, I do want to kind of at least say goodbye to the World Cup, which has been the foundation of our show almost. You know, so fare thee well, World Cup, Rugby World Cup 2019. You served us averagely.
Yeah, it was grand.
It was an okay finish.
But look, I'm excited about the weekend now, because as we've seen, as looking back at all that, you just know anything can happen in the world of sport. That's why you need to tune into us every Wednesday evening, or you can listen, and if you listen on Thursday or Friday, whatever it is, getting hyped for the weekend sport right here on Balls.ie Podcast. Just search Balls.ie Podcast in any good podcast feed to subscribe to the Build Up and all the rest of our podcasts throughout the week. Today we're going to be talking football. Obviously it's a big weekend in the Premier League with Liverpool playing Man City. We'll be chatting to Kevin Doyle in just a few moments about that. We'll also be playing 1-2-3, where you can win €100 cash by correctly predicting three of the scores in this weekend's Premier League games on ladbrokes.com. We'll have our big shout. I got 3 out of 4 last week in my big shout fourfold. Unfortunately, the big odds one didn't come off.
Yeah, the few odds on, including Man City to win at home at 12-1 on.
That came off.
Yeah, well
nearly,
done,
didn't, nearly didn't. Morris will be in later on as well. We'll be chatting through the GA. Lots of interprovincial or provincial club games happening this weekend, and a few more county finals, the late stragglers. And Morris will also be getting us hyped about the Pro 14. We said, you know, we're not talking about rugby as much, but he's going to get us excited about the Pro 14 and why we should pay attention to the provincial games around this weekend between Leinster, Munster, Ulster and Connacht.
Well, that's actually, me and Morris talked about it on our rugby podcast, World and Union, which you can listen to now, where we look back at the World Cup final, but also like to talk to him a little bit more about it. We had this like, oh my God, next week we're going to be talking about club rugby. It's not the end at all. It's actually the start of the rugby season.
Yep.
And so actually talking about this, like, we're a week away from the Champions Cup. We've got the Irish teams playing each other this week. I'm looking forward to talking a little bit more about this, because it is very, very suddenly just about the time of year where we all start to get interested in rugby anyway, except normally we aren't just coming off a massive World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. And also, later on, you're also going to have your NFL picks. I think, how many did you get last week? You didn't have a bad week.
Mark, I had one win, one loss, and one push. And I'll tell you all about it, because drama.
Cool, I'm very excited to hear about that later on in the show. But next up, I was actually away playing backgammon with Chris Eubank at the time, so you had to chat to Kevin Doyle on your own. Let's hear you get on.
Kevin, it's a massive, massive weekend because it's the one we've been kind of waiting for basically since last May, really. It's Liverpool and City again. Just looking at kind of the two teams coming into this, like I watched Liverpool and Villa on Saturday and like there's something very familiar about the way Liverpool are kind of eking out results a little bit. It feels like the Ferguson Manchester United team. I think somebody was saying cloppage time is the new is the new phrase for late Liverpool goals.
I know, they started the season so well and the last few games have been a bit, they haven't been in full flow, but they've got some good results. That result against Villa was fantastic. You know, that is the feeling when you go into the dressing room, you don't feel like you've played bad. You feel brilliant. You've come in, you've grabbed the victory from nowhere, really. You kept going. And that's sort of, it's just a good sign of a good team, good behind the scenes. Everything is happy because teams who aren't doing well, they don't get those sort of wins. They don't keep going till the 92nd or third minute. So that's a big boost. A big, big point in the season. I know it's early, but 11 games in and they've got Man City next week. It just keeps that bit of a gap and keeps them on a nice, you know, bit of buzz going into that massive, massive game.
Yeah, I saw somebody say like the difference between going in there where you lose and you could go second in the table versus you go in there winning and it's a 9-point lead. That's a massive psychological difference going into a match, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's 12 games into the season. I was saying Liverpool had the league won a few weeks ago if they play anyway well at all. You look at it now and you think, I was a bit ahead of myself. But if I was backing anyone, or if I still think I'd love to be in Liverpool's shoes, when you're saying that after Sunday, it'd be 3 points in it. But Liverpool, I think, are the two sides should be able to, you know, just, you know, a 6-point gap, should be able to enjoy the game a bit more. There's more pressure on Man City, I feel, because they know if they lose, it's going to be a really, really tough task from there, whereas they feel they have to win. Liverpool can just sort of not say enjoy the game because there's massive pressure on them too, but they can. I feel they're going into it a little less pressure than Man City will feel going into it. It's sort of now and ever for Man City, even at this early stage. It feels like it.
Yeah, we say about like the you know the late goals and the never been beaten. Like it's an amazing virtue for a team. Really, like it says so much about their character, about their manager, everything like that. Does it in any way underlie a problem there that maybe Liverpool aren't playing as smoothly or as well as they probably were earlier in the season?
No, they're not. But it just happens. You just can't go through a season, whatever it might be, different players in their form, tiredness, lots of games, as we hear Klopp on about the fixture list. You just don't play well all season. And it's important when you're not playing well still be able to get results. That's what it's all about. It's the best team. The teams that win the league are able to do it. Liverpool did it for a long phase of last season. I remember having this conversation about Liverpool not playing well but still getting wins. They're doing it this season. Didn't win the league last season, but they're in a slightly better position right now. They win the Champions League, obviously. Just a sign of... And then it's sort of like a habit. You do it a few times and it's like, you know, you realise that you're not panicking then in the 70th minute when you're 1-0 down, whatever the score is, you think, yeah, keep going, we've been here before, loads of times we'll do it, you know, keep going, 85th minute, 86th minute, someone will grab a goal, and that's the way it's been for Liverpool last season, as well as this season at times, and they will, they'll play well again in a few weeks, they could play well again Sunday, but it's just, you just can't do that for 38th game, Premier League, impossible, no one plays well every game.
Just got to eat the best teams
manage to get results. Yeah. Just professional players going about their job, not panicking. The manager not making foolish decisions on the touchline. One or two subs, but not drastic change for formation. Trust in his players. When you're on a pitch and a manager, you sense him panicking. When he's making subs after 50 or 60 minutes, you see people warming up and you see the manager on the sideline looking around and talking to his assistant manager. You sense that as a player. You're like, oh, here we go again. He's going to make a load of change, whatever. But you know, when a manager is calm and he trusts the players, it gives you on the pitch that bit of, well, I'm going to get 85, 90 minutes here. He's not going to take me off after 60 just because I haven't played well in the first 60. Trust me to come good maybe in the last 10 or whatever. And that, you know, if that happens a few times as a player, you can enjoy the game a bit more without looking over your shoulder thinking, I'm going to be subbed off here any minute if I take a bad touch or I don't score in the next 5 minutes. And I think the better managers are better at realising that a player mightn't play well, but, you know, he'd get me a goal in the last few minutes if I leave him on. And Liverpool. Klopp is obviously a top class manager, and he's able to get that out of his players.
It's fascinating. Yeah, very good point. I don't want to be too biased towards Liverpool here in what is a big game for both teams, but I suppose it is natural that they're the ones chasing the title and haven't won in so long. They only got 1 point from this fixture, from the two fixtures last season against City. It ultimately cost them the league. They had a better record against the other 18 teams than City did. But, you know, it wasn't, I suppose, they were two very, very close games and they could have won, I suppose, even either of them. Like, this is, you know, you talked earlier how big a game is, even though it's only November and no leagues are won. It's almost a psychological blow, is if they can beat City, it's not even just the 9 points, is it? It's more that we've done what we couldn't do last year.
I think so. And I think a lot of people, most people would say on paper, Man City have a better team, better squad, just about, definitely a better squad. So I suppose psychologically, Liverpool players will know that. They'll be telling themselves we're better, but listen, City are the champions, and Liverpool haven't done it in so long. So it is a psychological thing. Previous results haven't been gone Liverpool's way. So, you know, if they don't win, if they get beat on Sunday, it's another blow to them. It's another, here we go again, Man City are only 3 points behind us. So psychologically, as well as the points on the table, it's a massive thing. If they can win against Man City, they're beating the best team in the league. And all of a sudden, people are saying, well, Liverpool are the strongest team. The players that believe in themselves, that they're as strong as every Man City player, is good in every position. They don't have a strong squad, which is the only thing that I'd worry about for Liverpool over the course of the season. But they can stay fairly injury free. Their starting 11 is up there with Man City's. But yeah, it's more believing that and getting those results have gone against them. It's said, like scoring in the last few minutes in games, it's a habit. You start beating Man City, it becomes, you know, we can beat Man City no problem. Instead of worrying, can we beat these? Are these are the champions? We haven't beaten them in the past. So another mental hurdle that the team who wins the league has to overcome.
Definitely, yeah. There seems to be a lot of them before you get there. It's a pretty hard thing to win. Don't want to go too down. Like, I know you mentioned being a Manchester United fan on the show before, but another defeat at Bournemouth, you know. And I think the biggest thing at this stage is that people aren't surprised when they, you know, if you miss the match and you see the result, you're not that surprised to see Bournemouth won.
That was my bet for my Ladbrokes thing last week. My tip was Man United to get beat at Bournemouth. And like, even saying that, you know, is, you know, you'd never be putting that down on your back or whatever you're picking. So it's sad, everyone was saying they've won 3 games in a row or 4 games in a row or whatever, but the performances weren't great in those, and they weren't, you know, against great teams either. And still, just, you know, you just didn't feel they were going to go to Bournemouth. You don't really do well there anyway in the last few seasons. You didn't feel they were going to go there and get anything other than best, I felt, which is shocking, really. But it's just the way it is. And I don't know how they're going to turn it around. I don't see a few signings in January turning it around.
No, just
I like Solskjaer as a person. He seems a good man, but I don't see him in this job turning it around. I think he'll do better and he'll do fine and he might sign a few players, but I don't see them being anything other than, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th in the next few years if they maintain the current sort of situation. I think they need a wholesale. Shocking to say a new manager again. Yeah. And I keep saying it every week. I'm after Man United to lose. I'd love them to just go all out and get someone like Pochettino, preferably Pochettino, not someone like him. Someone who really inspires, who gets the best out of not the best squads. You know, to get Tottenham to the Champions League final, I still think it was the achievement of the last 5 or 6 years. You know, talk about Klopp as a manager and whatever, but to get Tottenham with their squad players to within game of winning the Champions League was just unbelievable. So I think he would be able to make a big difference straight away, knowing the league. So, you know, it cost 30 million to get Pochettino. 30 million to Man United is nothing. They spent 50 million on Billy Fred. So, like, 30 million for a manager who's going to save them 150 million in a few transfer windows, what he's been able to do at Spurs. So, you know, I just love them to go out and make a statement like that and just go for it. And, you know what, forget about what's gone on in the past and just get him in. Now, listen, he could fail. He might go his way. But it'd be a big statement. And I think it'd get all the fans back on a positive note and excited and looking forward to it. It'd be so long. Everyone's like Solskjaer grand, but he's not a first person that excites the fans, I don't think. Gets them believing in the team. And I think Pochettino would come in and be given time. Be patient with him because you know he can get results and get teams playing really well. And yeah, anyway, that's my feeling as a Man United fan and what I'd love to see happen.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating that like it's such a kind of an old school mentality that the manager's the most important person in the club by a mile, and is the person that's going to turn it around, but you won't spend it, but you'll spend five times that much on a player.
I know, yeah, it's seen as like, oh, 30 million to put, you know, yeah, as you say, he is the, you know, he'd be the main cog in the wheel or whatever, he's the one that gets the rest performance, so I don't see that as a big issue or a big outlay, but it seems to be an issue with clubs. Mm-hmm. I know managers think they're, you know, 6 months' time and they have to sack him or whatever, and it costs them a lot of money, but in this case, you know, when you really feel someone who's you know, got that fantastic Billy, a young manager who would really feel turn things around. I think he'd be worth every single penny and a lot more.
You would have to wonder about Solskjaer's future anyway, like regardless of whether they have Pochettino there, if they don't beat Brighton this weekend, Sunday, it's at home. Brighton aren't the easiest team to beat. I know your bet for Ladbrokes this week is coming out of this one, but, you know.
Oh, thank you. You just can't. I don't. I think it'll be a draw. I think Brighton are, at times, under Chris Hughton, they could be very boring and very organised and eke out results. They've maintained that, and they're doing what they're ahead of Man United at the moment. So I could see them going to Old Trafford and getting like a 1-1 draw there. I wouldn't be surprised at all. That is my particular week, which again is shocking to think Brighton go to Old Trafford and tip them to draw. Yeah. But that's just the way it is at the moment. Don't see it change anytime soon.
Yeah, well, that's 11-4, and I think we'll probably be talking about United again if that's the case, because I think the pressure will definitely mount. It seems like it's almost been a kind of he had enough results to kind of get away from the big conversation after losing to Bournemouth. But there you go. Anyway, I think it's only controversy around the corner. One other match I wanted to talk about, Kevin. There's a big one on Saturday night between Leicester and Arsenal. That, like, Leicester are absolutely flying. We've talked about them and Arsenal a good bit. Villa and Wolves on Sunday, from my point of view as a Villa fan, definitely interesting. From your point of view as a former Wolves player, definitely interesting. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of a fascinating thing, the Midlands rivalry. I was kind of watching them in the League Cup a few weeks ago. There's kind of four teams all around the same area. You always think of Villa and the Blues as the big rivalry there, and maybe West Brom, Wolves. But you would have played in a lot of these fixtures. They're mad atmospheres, like, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, really good. I played Wolves Birmingham loads of times, Wolves Villa a lot of times, Wolves West Brom. The Wolves West Brom one is the biggest one. Well, Villa Birmingham's massive, but the Wolves West Brom one, honestly, we had a kit man who was a Wolves fan or a kit man from Wolverhampton, hardcore Wolves fan, and when he came home from being to West Brom, he genuinely brought his runners out and burnt them because they'd been on the West Brom pitch. And that wasn't a joke, it wasn't a thing. He brought his runners out and burnt them, and he was dead serious about it. Like, that's the level it goes to. So, that's it, man. And they just hate each other. They hate each other. Wolves, West Brom. One of the main reasons Mick McCarthy got sacked when he was Wolves manager is because we played West Brom at home in the Premier League and we got beat. I can't remember what it was, 5-0 or 5-1.
Yeah, big result, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big loss. Like, it just was. Made his position untenable. It was, you know, end of the world stuff to be beaten by West Brom at home by that score. Pure hatred. They're like, they border each other. They're a few miles apart as the crow flies, the two stadiums. But it's like two different worlds, the fans. And it's great atmosphere, fantastic when you win. But it's just to see the passion and the hatred and the rivalry between the two. The fans, great to play in them, enjoyable. I really enjoyed it. And again, the same, not so big against Villa, but the same, you know, they don't like each other. It's not quite the rivalry the West Brom, the Birmingham Wolves one, the same sort of thing, but not as big as the Wolves West Brom one.
So we won't be expecting any runners burning after Sunday's game from or anything like that.
It was good though, it was a good story when you were telling me about it. I thought it was big. I was in the backyard and I burn it through every time I'm there. I have to go home and burn my pants and my socks and my runners. So, yeah, there you go.
Oh, just envisioning it now, it's insane. The game itself, though, Villa are on, like, I don't know, they seem, they're on a good run in theory, though. They've lost their last two games, obviously, to City and Liverpool. But, like, you know, very, very close against Liverpool. They've been very close in other games this year and lost the results. Wolves, on the other hand, have kind of, like, they started off so slowly. They're kind of playing more like the Wolves we thought they were at the start of the year now. Like, you know, they got the draw at the Emirates at the weekend. I don't know how you see this one going, or if you think that Wolves are firing on all cylinders quite yet.
Yeah, they're starting to get there. They are. They're doing okay in the Europa League as well. I don't know if that's going to take from them or not as the season goes on. I think it's adding confidence to them actually getting results in that. Villa as well. I watched the full game the other day, and they were really good. Listen, they were playing against the top team, obviously, but you know, they play good football. They're enjoyable. It's enjoyable to watch them. Good players, both teams, good players. I wouldn't be surprised which way this goes. I'll probably stick with Wolves in my whole team, obviously, and probably they probably have a stronger squad, a bit more experience, a few better players. But Villa, I really like that. Dean Smith, I think he's really good, positive manager. I think they'll be fine this season. But Wolves, we talked about them earlier. You know, we expect them to be that team who'd be top six, possibly ones from the outsiders to break into it. They hadn't showed that in the first five or six games, but they're starting to show that bit of form. You know, they could creep up along there. We expected them to be the Leicester. Well, Leicester are doing now, maybe more so than Leicester. But again, they'll be fine. And after such a good season last season, maybe it's, you know, maybe this is their, you know, back to where their sort of squad deserves to be, mid-table and just above it, maybe. And it'll take them another year to build again and push back up to where they were. But both good teams, both will stay in the league, and probably, I'd say, Wolves will probably make it on Sunday.
Okay. Well, thanks a million, and enjoy the weekend. Actually, Sunday especially looks like it's going to be a brilliant weekend.
Yeah,
thanks a million for taking the call, Kevin.
No worries, mate. Nice talking to you.
I'm sorry, burning your tracksuit.
And your runners.
And your runners. Jeez.
But you're like, I mean, he hated Wolves. No, he hated West Brom, sorry.
He loved Wolves.
Yeah, he's mad about Wolves. What a brilliant story.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I don't know, like I've always felt like I've hated certain teams and stuff like that, but I don't know if it ever go that far. He touched the sod, like, that's... Does he not realise that they replant that every year? Like,
oh, it's brilliant.
The maddest thing I've ever heard happening on a football pitch. I don't know if this is connected, but did you ever hear the time that Barry Fry was he Birmingham or Peterborough manager? I think it was Birmingham at the time. And they were on a really bad run of luck. And they were like bottom of the league in like League One or whatever it was. And it turned out that St. Andrews was built on an Indian burial ground, and he was told that one of the ways that you can stop the curse is by going for a pee in each of the corner flags.
Oh, I heard of
which
this.
Which Barry went and did. Which is nothing to do with the story we're talking about, but just something that popped into my head there for a second. The sacred ground, etc.
Well, look,
Midlands football, that sort of thing.
If you have any superstition stories about football or any sport, be sure to email thegaffer@boz.ie. Let us know. We might even read them out on the show next week. But there are obviously the big game is Liverpool against Man City this weekend, but there's a couple of other ones I'm interested in especially. Leicester against Arsenal for a start, because I want to talk about, I've been doing an accumulator in the Ladbrokes stores at the bet stations with Declan Maron from Ladbrokes as well, helped me make some of the selections.
Yeah.
We've gotten 4 out of 5 the last 2 weeks, but this week we were talking about we have to pick two in the fivefold of two of the team, two pick two games in which the team's going to win. He had suggested Leicester to beat Arsenal. I was kind of a bit hesitant. I was like, oh, there must be a more clear winner in some of the other games. And then I looked at them and I was like, do you know what? There's absolutely no reason bar Arsenal's, like, your historic kind of thinking around Arsenal.
Yeah, and some of the players that they have, and the fact that if they got it together on a certain day, you know, they're not easily bet either. Like, I don't know what you mean, though. Leicester are a better football team than them at the moment.
Like. Exactly, and that Leicester have gone from, like, even the year they won the Premier League, you kept thinking, oh, well, they'll not win this game, or they'll not win this game. Whereas, like, you wouldn't have said at the start of the season that you'd be going into a Leicester City against Arsenal when they play each other in a couple of months' time, that you'd be going, Leicester are deserved favourites, and that Do you know that? That's the thing. I was like, you know, it's one of those that you'd say, right, look, I need to stop thinking of Arsenal as old Arsenal. Yeah. And Arsenal fans obviously need to stop thinking of Arsenal as old Arsenal.
Because until Mourinho takes over.
Oh, that is going to be a match made in heaven.
Will it? That can't possibly happen.
I don't know. What's going to happen? Like, oh, I don't know. I don't even think about it.
Poor Arsenal. It's grim. Although, poor Arsenal in a way, they're also... they're acting the Egypt themselves, the fans, at the moment. Like, you know,
that's so what I mean.
When fans continue to act the Egypt, it's hard to feel sorry for them when the team goes and does exactly what they're complaining about in the first place, you know?
Yeah. I also want to mention, Burnley are playing West Ham this weekend. Okay. And you're talking about, you know, you randomly end up hating teams or disliking teams. Me and Burnley are finished. I have no time. Sean Dyche, I don't care if he eats worms or doesn't eat worms. I have no time for him anymore. I don't care how good a manager he is. I don't care the fact that he's kept Burnley in the Premier League somehow for all these years. It's been an incredible achievement. He can go and throw it all in the bin because he's after ruining my accumulator for the last 2 weeks. I've gotten 4 out of 5 2 weeks in a row, and both times it's Burnley that have scuppered it.
Well, there you go. Burnley are on a weird run. Weird run of form. We're a weird football team in general, I think, actually. I was looking at the team as it was lined out on Saturday, and I was just thinking, Chris Wood is off injured, and I was like, is Ashley Barnes and Jay Rodriguez up front? The game before that, it was Ashley Barnes and Jeff Hendrick up front. And you're thinking to yourself, how is this a Premier League football team?
Yep.
You know, but they do all right. They do everything. They win every time you're not betting on them. And, you know, I don't know. Like, they're a weird, weird team. Can I just go back really quickly to Leicester, though?
Just one last thing in Burnley. And we can. It's that they're playing West Ham this weekend, which could be the first weekend we see a game where both teams actually... You know, Champions League last night, we saw two players sent off and the one passenger play. I'd never seen that before. This weekend could be the first time we'll see two teams playing each other and both of them end up losing.
Yeah, right. Okay. West Ham are... Mind-boggling. They started off the season, you thought they're going to be breaking into the top six here, or they're going to be at least challenging for it. And they've just... Do you know what they've done? They do what Watford normally do in March and just stopped. Like, just like, is it their season's over? Except they did it in the middle of September.
It's my fault. I cursed. Remember, I came on the build-up and talked about it. I said that I fully expected West Ham to beat United. There wasn't a doubt in my mind that they were going to beat Man United that weekend. And so they did. Haven't won a game since.
I told you about that before when I watched the Monday Night Football when they played Villa, and it was a nil-all draw. But like, West Ham played Villa off the park. They didn't really create any chances, and that would be a worry for me, is that they weren't very, like, they weren't incredibly incisive or anything like that. But as a football team, they just looked very, very solid and very good. And I don't know what's happened to them in the last month. But anyway, look, they've plenty of time to turn around. Just want to go back to Leicester, right? There's a point here. On, like, their favourites to beat Arsenal. They're very clearly the third best team in the league at the moment. Whether they will be in May, I don't know. But, you know, there'll be runs from Chelsea, and there'll be runs from, you'd imagine, Tottenham. And I don't know who else, to be honest. I think they have a huge chance of getting into the top four. Like, you know, I can't see Arsenal or United bothering them. But, like, Brendan Rodgers went from possibly... Like, when he had this rise that... He took over Liverpool and it was like crest of a wave stuff, like, and nearly won the league with possibly not the best team in the league. Should have won it, but at the same time, that wasn't a team that was set up to win the league. Then, you know, it went wrong. Grand, that can happen at a big club like Liverpool. Did whatever he could at Celtic, won the league every year. You know, what else are you supposed to do? And now he's come back. And look at the job he's doing already at Leicester. Like, you know, and think, like, I know they've got money, but they don't have more money than the teams are up there with. And, like, they sold their so-called best central defender just before the start of the season. Brendan Rodgers is an underrated football manager.
Oh, definitely.
Like, he's, and I think that's, like, just a fact now. I think people have almost forgotten how they thought of him before he got the Liverpool job. But you get a job like that, and even though... he didn't do badly. He nearly won the league. He did as well as any other Liverpool manager for the last however many years. Because of the way it ended, it's like you can never get that reputation back again. It's weird, isn't it? Like, I don't think he's seen as much as the reason why this Leicester team are as good as they are as any other manager in the Premier League would be. I heard just talking about, like, who the worst manager is on the football show on Monday. And I was looking at the league while I was listening to it, nearly thinking who is. And I was looking at Leicester and I was like, nobody's talking about Rodgers. They're talking about the team, but they're not talking about Rodgers.
And I had that exact thought when we were talking about the worst Premier League manager. I was like, do you know, if we're having a discussion who the best is, Rodgers would have to be in the... I was thinking about watching the Liverpool game, actually. And I was like, that Rodgers, Klopp and Guardiola, like... no one, you'd be laughed at if you mentioned him in the same breath as the other two.
Yeah.
But like the job he's done, the job he did at Liverpool the first time, like he needs to, he's obviously miles behind in terms of that he hasn't won the trophies yet, and he's a long way to go.
He won a few trophies in Scotland.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because Leicester won the league with Claudio Ranieri?
Maybe.
Do you think that has something to do with it? Because like, it's almost like as if Asher, anyone could do that job. Leicester are random. They just win the league every few years.
I liked Killian Sheridan's tweet about it. I think, I can't remember if it was the Hearts job or the Hibernian job, but he was like, I think Brendan Rodgers could be tempted back up to Scotland if he thinks, you know, he might have a bit of unfinished business up there. And also, it'll get him out of this VAR-infested cesspit of a league, which we call the Premier League.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm going to say it here first, and you've heard it here first. How about Claudio Ranieri to Hearts?
There you go, hooking up with the lads from Succession.
Tinkerman, yeah.
The Rise.
Lamented by Hibs.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. Look, keep Leicester in your mind there, because we're gonna pick our 1-2 free picks for this week. Yes, 1-2 free. It's your chance to win €100 cash on ladbrokes.com. You can play it for absolutely free. All you have to do is correctly predict the score of three of this weekend's Premier League matches. If you get one of them right, you get a €1 free bet. If you get two, you get a €5 free bet. And if you get all three, you win yourself €100 cash. Mick, the first game up is, guess what? Leicester against Arsenal. What are you going for here?
You're
going
to laugh at me. 1-1. And I'll tell you why. Leicester have been on this run. They've been getting all the results that they're supposed to get. And I always feel with these, like, that always kind of just comes to an end, and a bit of bad luck go, or they're also, like, not that much better than Arsenal. And I do find that when you start to write off Arsenal is when this team, like, even just look at where they are in the league. They're a very, very strange team. They feel like they're constantly in crisis, but they'll go on a 10-match unbeaten run. You know, and I know they're not on in the middle of one at the moment, but like, you know, Villa should have beaten them earlier in the year. They beat them 3-2. You know, they went ahead with Wolves this last week, but you know, another kind of a 1-1 draw. They'll just sort of get these sort of like tap away results over the course of a year and end up in fifth or sixth place or whatever like that. So they don't lose that often, you know. They obviously have a terrible away from home record, but at the same time, I can just see them sneaking out a result here one way. I'd say it actually could go ahead. Thinking, oh, all's right with Arsenal. Emery's going to keep his job. Leicester will equalise, you know, 55 minutes, and then Leicester will have all of the pressure for the rest of the game, but not get the winner.
Yeah, like Arsenal, in spite of everything that's happened, they're still in fifth, which is mad. But look, I'm going to have to go with my original prediction. So I'm going to go with a Leicester win, 2-1 here. And then you get the next game up is Man United against Brighton. I'm going for a very, very boring nil-all draw, Mick.
Kevin Doyle went for a draw in this game as his bet. I'm going to go for a draw in this game, both here and in my bet, because you'll be hearing a little bit more about that in a minute. And I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. 2-1.
1-1 draw.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the big game of the weekend, Liverpool against Man City. It's on Sunday afternoon. It's the third game in our Ladbrokes 1-2-3, and I'm going for 1-1 here.
I like 1-1. I'm going to go for a draw outside of 1-2-3, as I'll talk about in a minute, right? Because I think that is possibly the most likely result in terms of win, lose, or draw. However, in terms of scoreline, the one I'm just eking towards is 2-1 to Liverpool.
What?
I think Liverpool could win this game. I think it's at Anfield. I think we were talking to Kevin there, right, about this. They haven't won in, like, they got 1 point from this fixture last year. If they'd got any more than that, they would have won the league.
Yeah.
You know, like, they did better than City outside of their fixtures against the other 18 teams. I feel like it's, as we talked about with Kevin, I think it's a big psychological next step for Liverpool to go and beat City in the league. I think if they do that, I think they, you know, I think there's nothing else stopping them, you know, and I think that this week might be the week to do it, you know. I'm very torn. As you can see in a minute, I'm going to pick a draw again, but I think maybe 2-1.
Go for it. Look, you can play yourself right now for absolutely free. Get on to ladbrokes.com and play 1-2-3. You could win yourself €100 cash.
All right, hold it. Steady. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round. No, don't.
Martin! Yes, that is the voice of Graham Taylor, which of course means that it is time for our big shout. We have yet to win one of these 25-1 or greater big shouts, and nobody else has either. And if you do, you will win yourself 2 cakes and a sports biography. It is open to everyone to enter. Just get on to ladbrokes.com right now. Have a look through the odds for some of the sporting events happening over the weekend. Find yourself, maybe it's a one-off bet, maybe it's an accumulator, maybe it's a treble, a fourfold, whatever it is. Just look at the odds. You don't even have to put the bet on. Just take a screenshot of what the odds are and send them to us. Send them to the gaffer at balls.ie. And if it comes off, and provided it's 25-1 or greater, you will win yourself 2 cakes and a sports biography. Mick,
I will personally bake those cakes, Mark.
That's a fib.
I will we'll personally pretend that ask my wife to bake send those cakes.
But look at last weekend, I came quite close and also quite far away from winning the big shout.
Yeah.
It was my turn. I went for Man City against Southampton. Man City win 1-12. Nearly didn't come off, but it just about did.
Congratulations.
Leicester to beat Crystal Palace at 11-10. That came off. Leeds versus QPR. I want to talk about that in a second when you've given us your big shout. I went for under 2.5 goals there, 23-20. That came off. But Thomas Davis did not beat Ballyboden. And that was the 9-2 one, which was driving it up over 25-1. This week, though, you maintain you've got something very interesting and also something that's going to come off.
Yeah, I will say that you're saying you got close there, but again, the big one didn't really
come
close.
I think it was 4-1, the other three on their own.
And fair enough, but the big one that you needed to make it a big shout didn't really come into play. So I would still argue that my missing out by a couple of very, very tight bets, including a draw in the Dr. Crokes match and Ferrari not winning the Mexican Grand Prix is the closest we've come yet. Closely followed by Man City winning 8-0 instead of 6-0 against Watford.
Yeah.
But I've got one this week that I like, right? And I've touched on it already here. There's 3 games on Sunday. We've talked about all of them. You know, there's the 2 games on TV, United and Brighton, and obviously Liverpool City. And then there's the Midlands Derby, the West Midlands Derby between Wolves and Aston Villa, which is also on at 2 o'clock on Sunday. I had a look at all of these individually and went, I think that's going to be a draw. Kevin backed that up with his pick for this week is 11-4 draw between United and Brighton. Your pick in the 1-2-3 was a draw between United and Brighton. I'm getting to the stage where I'm going to be very surprised if this match is a draw because everybody thinks it is. But as we talked about with Kevin, like, you're not expecting United to win this game at Old Trafford. Brighton, decent team. I think they're, what are they, 9th in the league, 8th in the league, something like that. And 8th, I think. And, anyway, I have thought about putting the 5-1 away win in this, but decided a draw is the most likely result. But had looked at the other two and also was like, I'm a Villa fan, obviously, as I thought, like, you know, watching this Wolves run a bit of form. I'm like, I do fancy us to get a draw in this game. I can't really see us winning it, but I do fancy us to get a draw. That's 5-2, and suddenly I'm thinking, Liverpool Man City, like, the most likely result in this game is a draw, I think. You know, it's the most likely. I think 0-0, 1-1, even 2-2. You know, I think both teams, the way Liverpool are never beaten, if City can get a kind of a run on them, City might leak goals. You know, there's a lot going on, a lot to add to a draw. And surprisingly, that's 5-2 as well. You add all that up together. 3 draws on Sunday, an easy one to remember. It's 44.93-1.
That is,
so we're talking 45-1 here.
Yeah, and like, I obviously went for, like, I have two of them games are in the 1-2-3. I went for 2 draws. My only worry though is I was torn between United and the United Brighton one. I was going to go for United win, but every time I predict that United are going to win, they ultimately lose. So that was putting me off. But like, Brighton are great, as you mentioned, they're doing really well. They're up in the top 10, but their away record is dreadful. They've only won one game away from home. They've only played 5, to be fair, in the Premier League so far. It's not like it's the middle of April or anything. But if they beat Watford and they got a draw in another game and then lost the other 3.
Yeah, so they did lose to, like, they lost Aston Villa, right? They played with 10 men for the majority of the game and genuinely played Villa off the park. Like, they were unlucky to lose that game. I think a lot of Villa fans even talked about that afterwards, about how good this Brighton team is, you know, and that's after a defeat.
And United,
that's very unusual you'd hear that, like, you know.
And United's home record, they played 5-1-2, so it's not much better than Brighton's away. No. But anyway, yeah, so I do, I like that. I like that. That's definitely an interesting one.
45, I would have
thought we'd be a lot shorter.
I would have done this at 30-1. I would have.
Yeah.
So I'm getting good odds here from Ladbrokes.
That's almost two big shouts in the one. You're only five. You're only an extra 5-1 away from that being 4 cakes and 2 sports biographies. But if you have any selection yourself, and if it does happen to be 50-1 or greater, we might even send you out 2 sports biographies. Like I said, get in touch with us. Email thegaffer@buzz.ie. Put the big shout in the subject line just to make it a little easier for us to find it. And if you win, there'll be so much jubilation. We might even get you on the show next week to gloat. Yeah. I also want to, before we go off.
This is a medium shout now, yeah?
This is a medium shout, right? A study of sorts. Okay. I'm going to do an experiment. Study, right? An experiment, okay. Right?
Betting study.
Yeah, Leeds United have played 15 games.
Go. Leeds again.
Leeds have played 15 games in the Championship so far this season, right? How many of them would you say had over 2 goals in the game?
Out of 15?
Yeah.
God, they really get through games in the Championship, don't they? I'd say 6 at least.
3.
Wow. Okay, 6 was going low now just because I assumed there was a reason for you asking the question.
There's been one game since August in which Leeds have had... Leeds have been involved in that has more than 2 goals.
They weren't that tight last year, were they?
No. We've stopped scoring and we've stopped conceding. They don't concede any goals. And then they nick the odd one every now and again. That's basically what's happening. So I'm going to do it again. I'm going to take €5.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it on Leeds... Blackburn overs this weekend, which is actually a very tricky one to start on because Blackburn aren't doing well and I could very easily see Leeds win this game 3-0. But I'm going to say under 2.5 goals, 21-20. So you're getting just over evens odds. I'm putting a fiver on it. If I win the fiver, I'm going to bank the winnings and put that same fiver on again and just see how many I get. Because if I did it for the last, I think I would, if I did it the last 6 games, you'd be up €20.
Also, bank the winning, so you can afford to lose one then after this week. Right, okay.
And if I lose this week, it's done.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, okay. So that's very responsible gambling there, actually, Mark. I'm proud of you. Look, that's something to watch because Blackburn have an Irish centre-half partnership in Derek Williams and Daryl Lenihan. So keep an eye on that one. Let the boys do the job.
Yeah,
I think Lenihan especially will be in the Ireland squad a couple of days after this, so he'll go in there in good form.
My only worry is that of the last 5 games Blackburn have played in, only one of them has had less than 3 goals.
Yeah, but they haven't been playing Leeds.
Yeah, exactly. But look, if you are having any bets this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly, and you can visit dunlewy.net for more information. Next up, we're going to get Maurice Brosnan into studio. He's going to chat to us about the GAA club games this weekend and also get us hyped for the rugby interprovincial games in the Pro 14 this Saturday and Sunday. Morris, welcome to the studio. I think the first thing that me and you need to do is issue an apology.
For what? Well, I'm willing to apologise for anything. But
what does it now I need to apologise
exactly.
for?
Exactly.
I never apologise. I'm sorry, it's just the way I am.
You always apologise.
That's a dad
joke.
You
always say sorry for opinions.
It's just a Simpsons joke, Mark. Relax.
I know.
What's he apologising for?
Yeah, what am I apologising for?
Last week we came up with a theory. We just blazingly just threw this theory out there that club football and club hurling in the provincial championships, it's all like, you know, how long of a build up you have, you know, time to prepare for the game, about whether you've won the championship before or whether it's been a while since you won it. And if you've won it a few years in a row, then you're focused on the provincials really, and you're going to get back to basics. So that's why, you know, the likes of Turles Strand's going to win, that's why Castlerahan are going to win. A load of absolute nonsense. Codswallop. It's nothing to do with anything.
I also should just jump in here and say I bear some responsibility for that theory as well. I think I really championed it on last week's show, but I didn't make any of the picks, so over to you, Mr.
What do we have to say for ourselves? I have nothing to say for myself. I don't understand anymore. I just can't.
I think you'll find I wonder, do you listen at all? Because in that course of that conversation, we said it can go one of two ways.
Yeah,
either it runs or
that
runs.
That was us sitting on the fence.
They build momentum or it goes the other way. Now, as it turns out, it did go the other way.
Definitely.
I think 40 Pierce are actually now my favourite team in the world, both because there's just so much to like about them. Like the fact that they definitely, judging by the scenes on Instagram, celebrated winning Roscommon County Championship as they're only entitled to, turn around and bet Turles Strand. The Dailies, who any regular listeners of the Three Man Weave would know, we were big fans of. 3 Dailies started this game. one finished, one got sent off, one got a black card today. Without a doubt, my favourite brothers on this team. And on top of that, now they've got a really nice draw up against, they're playing the Gales, aren't they? The London champions in the in the next round. So that's really nice. So yeah, I'm all on Padraig Pearse. The can be bet, won't be bet, going all the way. I've done a full 180 based after last week's prediction.
I didn't see the Niamh Connell Castlerahan game, but for like there's a lot of aspects to it. But one of them that I like hearing about was that Niamh Connell have, you know, we always talk about it on the three man weave, but you know, the full court press on a kick out and how great it is to see. Not when Niamh Connell, half their team are over 6'2" and they just seem to be, go back to the old way of like, well, we're just going to lump it out to midfield and one of our really tall lads are going to kick it, are going to catch it, and then it's going to be 3-on-2 inside and we'll have a goal chance every time we take a kick out.
But for, like, joking aside, for them to go through a county final trilogy to go and beat the champions.
What a story that is.
To score in the last second, which was a wrongly controversial winning score, although I don't know if everybody in this room agrees with it. I thought it was clearly over the bar. But either way, to do that on a Wednesday night and go and celebrate your county title and to go out and win your Ulster match as against the team Mark's been talking up for months, or a week at least anyway.
No months, to be fair.
Is a phenomenal achievement. And do you know what? It speaks to, this is the wrong word because it's GAA, but it speaks to brilliant professionalism in the team. For like a club team to be able to kind of turn that around, like,
yeah, I absolutely agree. Yeah, like it might not be the prettiest.
No, it never is with Donegal club football.
But whatever about it says about Donegal football, what does it say about Cavan football, Mark?
I don't even go there. It's been a difficult weekend for both on a personal level and an entire Cavan level for Cavan club football in the Ulster Championship.
We should tell listeners, and Maris, I haven't told you this story either, that Mark's club Killincare lost the Ulster Junior semi final.
Yeah, you knew that part.
And look, it's unfortunate they lost by 2 points. Had a great year, Mark, though. You one of your happiest ever football year?
Oh yeah, I literally never won a final. Yeah. Before in my life.
Won the treble.
I won
this
three
year.
Of them this year. Yeah. But lost after extra time in the Ulster semi final.
After extra time, yeah, as well.
In the worst conditions in the world. It looked like Clontibert and Castlerahan could be called off. It was that bad.
So I went to check the score, typed in Killincare into Twitter, and all I saw was official Donegal GAA said that whoever their team that won the other semi final, congratulations to so and so. They'll play.
Bulcrana had won.
Bulcrana, they said. They'll play Monaghan champions Killincare in the final. And I went, oh, they've made a mistake, but which one? And the wait went on as I had that awful moment where I didn't know whether
what side. Yeah, yeah.
Bunkran actually won that game on penalties, so best luck to anyone who's trying to given that we even actually played in that game, I still wouldn't have a clue who's going to win that final. So Morris, give us some predictions for the weekend.
It's a savage weekend. Actually, an unbelievably entertaining weekend. Like, this is a really funny time for the club championship. Not to get fully into it, but like, it does feel like, I don't know if either of you read Matty Kirkland's article in the Irish Times today, which has caused a bit of controversy, but he's like trying to, I think, before I go on to explain it, please just go and read it. Don't jump to an assumption if anybody hasn't read it and listening. But he basically tried to contextualize the county championship, not downplay it, I don't think, but just say like it matters locally, it's not that big a deal. What, and if this, one of the proposals for the GAA fixture review committee is that you'd split the year entirely, so July in county would finish, club starts afterwards, and that's just the, you know, you wouldn't have the 1% dictating to the 99%. At the same time, he kind of makes the case like, what does that do in terms of marketing? What does it do in terms of opening gaps for other sports as a product? Now, like, a part of me is really reluctant to discuss to GAA and players in those kind of terms, but it's also just a reality and you kind of have to. And then I look ahead to this weekend, and I don't know if you necessarily agree, but like, on paper this should be as enjoyable as, you know, provincial finals and inter-county game. Like, there's some unbelievable games.
The Hurling, like, especially, like, there are provincial games here that are just almost impossible to call.
So do you think that like the hype is there for them? Like, is there,
can I just jump in here quickly, because I think there is a kind of, we have two actual like GAA club men here, and there is that, the 1% versus the 99%, I think is an argument for players, right? And I
absolutely
think there's a marketing thing there, but I think there's a middle ground where is there's a GAA public who are fans as well, you know, and generally, you know, you'll be your club and your county, right? And there's very few people that don't have, you know, especially in the country outside of Dublin, there's very few people that don't have a link to both the club and the county, right? However, 99% of clubs are gone by the time anybody's paying attention to this, by the time we're getting to provincial. And it's like, I, as a county fan, as well as a club fan, right, I don't want to see, but I'm not a player, you know? I'm not, I don't have to sacrifice my whole life for it or whatever. But I also don't want a county season that's rushed or that all the games are on at the same time so I can't watch other matches. I have to only go to see my team and lots of other stuff. There is, like, it's not as simple as always, like, the club player has to be looked after. Of course they do, but it's not ever, it's not just, oh, marketing and money if you're trying to look after the other side. There is a GAA public, there is
a community,
there is thousands upon thousands, upon hundreds of thousands of people who go to games who want to see their team and want to see these competitions at the highest possible level for as long as they can go as well, you know?
And so, the other reality, well, not reality, because it's impossible to do it because we're in Ireland after all, but the thing that drives me mental is that the best club games of the year are played in atrocious weather weather conditions.
Really frustrating.
And it's actually almost, we're saying these are, like, we're building up going big high, you know, getting hype for these matches, and on paper they're they look fantastic, but then they're actually played on grass, and that grass is generally muck at this stage of the year. And like, it's, and even injuries, like, I'd love to do a study on the amount of people getting injuries in November, December playing, because you can see it happening. There's, like, it's been a long year obviously already on these players, and you'll see lads getting injured in the, whether it be the, from the bad weather, getting, you know, pulling the legs out of them, or just the fact that the miles and the clock for the year.
You're so right. These, like you're saying, like the, these games and the, like on paper how good they sound, there's two things I would say. One, I want to go back to Mark's point, but the first one is that, like, you know, there's a bit of hype there, there should be more, and it's good that we're talking about them, and I'd like to know more, and I'd like them to have more coverage, I'd like more people to be behind, more people to go, but at the same time, you're just never going to get, it's not like, it's always going to be small, it's always going to be the small town, and that's going to have its own core crowd, and then a lot of GAA people will try and watch it, but it's only going to be a certain amount, so you can't keep up with who all these teams are. There's so many happening on the county level all the way down, you can only watch one or two games a week, like, at the most, you know. The other thing though, to Mark's point, is, like, you know, these hurling games sound brilliant and they might be great, but, like, generally what do you see? You know pissings of rain. I was watching a Cork quarter final in, like, literally the worst weather conditions I've ever seen. Pitches at this time of year, that, like, the grass is slightly a little bit too long, you can't even see the lines on the pitch sometimes, you know, and it just looks freezing cold, and the standard just isn't what it would be at in September or October, like, you know.
There was one ball in our game last week. We were in the athletic grounds, which is, again, if it's not, you know, if the pitch in the athletic grounds isn't going to be up to it, there are very few pitches that are going to be up to it, given it's a county ground center, and the ball just stopped on the sideline. It just didn't cry. It's like, that's like when things are getting, you know, when it's just that kind of condition, it's very hard to have a really fast flow and entertainment game. Every ball has to go into someone's chest. If it hits the ground at all, it's just going to skid on.
Yeah, I suppose my point really briefly is not to downplay these at all, because we are, like, it is exciting and they are good. I just don't think that we should be unrealistic about kind of complaining too much about the coverage and the interest that's in there. Let's take whatever we have, and it's brilliant that we've got RT and TG Carter showing all these games, and it's brilliant that RT Radio will have people at nearly every match, and, you know, we'll have loads of stuff on balls.ie about it, and other places do too, you know. There is a bit there.
Absolutely.
And let's take that for what it is, because if you look at it, actually, there's going to be, you know, there's some of these games that are going to have, you know, 1,500 people at them, like, you know?
Yeah, like, I actually think you've articulated that better than I was going to, so...
I doubt that, Maris, but you don't have to be polite. I know, but I've just wasted all the time.
But no, and, like, I definitely think it's a point. I also think that, like, on the other hand as well, there's some amazing stories. I thought this Brendan Maher at the weekend, I think it was just class. Like, what a week for him to win an All-Star, win an All-Ireland, and then end a 33-year wait with his club to win a county title. Like, I those kind of stuff, especially after the difficulty he went through with a cruciate injury last year, I think is great.
They are again this week.
An interesting price, that, right? 6-5 against Glen Rovers. Now, like, Paddy is like, yeah, like, our topic of last week where we talked about Padraig Pearce's and whether or not, like, it is, like, there, I think the reason that you might slightly, that game probably should have been priced at evens against, they're against a Glen Rovers team who were well beat by Imakilty again. I don't know if they, like, I don't know how impressive they were. That you, Mick just mentioned that quarterfinal that was on RTE against Midland. I don't, like, that game was a bit, It was just, conditions obviously played a part, but I don't know, were either team that impressed with that day either, to be honest. Then you're looking at the, like, and a Barca Lee team, like, Dan McCormack, Brendan Maher, Paddy Stapleton at centre back, like, they've got, there's names there. They came through, that was a really, really good Killangan team that they won against last week. If, like, I think you're looking at them to have the Patrick Pearce's effect, to keep that bounce going and carry it into the weekend. But given that if you were to look at it, I think that probably is closer to an even money bet. There's probably is a bit of value in.
What price are they?
They're 6-5 right now.
Yeah. I wonder as well how much Glen Rovers are going to be able to, like, again, we're talking in maybes pure, and yeah, probably's, but how much can you lift yourself for a Munster championship when you shouldn't even be in it? Like, you know, like, obviously they are entitled to be in it. They lost to a divisional team in Imakili, but, like, they didn't win the Cork championship, you know, and it is a weird thing to kind of recover from that and say, oh, sure, lads, we've Munster to play for, you know? What do you think?
It's hard to know. I've literally never had that thought before in my life. Yeah. But it's not a thing that you...
It's a bizarre circumstance to come off, though. Like Glen Rovers are totally fixated on winning a county championship, like, and particularly given how strong McKilty have been over the last 3 years. So, like, that was their entire focus, and then they haven't reached that target. Like, yeah, that's just the fact. Yeah. And then you've tried and rise yourself for a Munster game after that. It's a really weird circumstance to be in. The other side as well, then, in Galway, we might talk about Lee Mellows, was that 2 weeks ago that we tipped Mellows? They're in the final this week against St. Thomas's. Like, there's some really nice stories in that team. This is the typical, by the way, like what we talked about at the time. This is a star-studded St. Everybody knows St. Thomas's, like the Burks, Conor Cooney, the all back out against the replay of last year's final, which they won handy. So as a result of that, Mellows are a pretty big price there at 11th day. I'm not sure, like, it's... I do think that Mellows are a better team than that, but I still don't know if they're going to win, if that makes sense. Like, I think if you are watching this game, there's a lot of things to really watch out for. Like, Galway are talking about finally getting a manager appointed before the end of the week.
Before the end of next year.
Which is literally incredible, like, that we're talking about that before. Like, a county championship is unfolded where you've got some really good young players playing and no manager there watching them. It nearly defies belief. Kieran Carey was on the sideline for the semi-finals, whatever that means. I don't know. He was watching. Lewis McKean, who actually, funnily enough, was in the running for the Clare job, actually pulled out of it to focus on Mellows. I think it's a really nice story that focus was paid off for in a semi-final, and I think if they do win in a final, I'd be delighted for him as well, just to see that come off. But, like, I think it's a big price. That could be a great game as well. It's not on TV. We'll talk about another football game that's not on TV in a second. It's not on TV, but as a spectacle, like, anyone looking at that, I think it's a really interesting tie there.
Football, you mentioned, I think I can guess what game you're talking about that isn't going to be on TV. It's the Kerry Championship final.
Yeah, I don't want... I'm not criticising anybody for this. Like, I can totally appreciate this stuff that we don't understand. Like, there's circumstances, there's county boards, all different things. But I just think it's such a massive shame that East Kerry against Dr. Oaks is not on television. It's on Austin Stark Park this weekend. An East Kerry team that have been absolutely outrageous coming into this tournament. Like, the David Clifford is going to get... rightly gets so much attention when it comes to East Kerry. But away from that, like... There is guys who you will see in the Kerry setup next year playing with East Kerry who could have a huge impact. David Clifford's older brother, Paddy, Colin Cooper was talking about this yesterday on the RTG podcast as well. He has to be, like, absolutely has to be in the conversation for a Kerry spot. Like, not whatever about the panel. Like, he's been...
talking about Paddy Clifford is the ultimate, you should see the brother, in respect to David Clifford, I've ever heard. It's like, oh, David Clifford, that's the name of yourself, but you should see the brother.
So he's there. You've got Darragh Roach, who'd probably be in the panel as well. And then Tony Brosnan for Crokes. There's three new Kerry footballers who'll all be... They're going head-to-head this weekend, like Crokes against East Kerry in Austin Stark Park. Now... Right, given all of that, it's very interesting that both teams have been priced at evens.
Especially when you consider, I remember a few weeks ago we were talking about East Kerry and Dingle, and Dingle were favourites for that.
Yeah,
and I think we're strong enough favourites. It shows you how far East Kerry have come in everybody's estimations over the last couple of games.
So I think East Kerry at evens is, I would have priced them as favourites, given how well they've performed coming into this tournament. Given as well, like, you have to take this in context. We talked about this, I can't remember which one of you made this point, that, like, we look at it in names, but you have to look at, until you see the teams, you don't really know. This is a Dr. Crokes team where Kieran O'Leary came off because he injured his jaw in the semi-final. We don't know if he's fit. David Shaw, another guy who was knocking on the door with Kerry, is definitely not going to play. So he's also injured. Jordan Keelty, who's been coming on, like, every game he's been featuring. Also, they're two, you mentioned muscle injuries, two hamstring injuries. They're both out. Like, we know they're not going to play. Kieran O'Leary is an All-Ireland winner. If he's not playing as well, that's three big players not playing for Crokes. And then an East Kerry team with everything coming behind them. A team that's only going to get stronger with Moore. I think that... another one interesting narrative about that is that the winner, if Crokes win this, they go on to play a Munster semi-final the week after. But if they don't win, if East Kerry win, it goes to Austin Stacks, who are in the who won the club championship. There's two different competitions in Kerry. Most people don't notice, club and county. Austin Stacks won it earlier in the year, so they'll go ahead if Austin Stacks are training, not knowing if they're going to play Munster for 2 weeks. However, the Kerry County Board of
Commons just thought the Cork Hurling man was bad.
It didn't. This is Kerry's always the.
But wait,
the other teams in Munster hanging around for them is the funny thing.
The Kerry County Board have come out this week because of the way the nature of the rules in this game. There is no winner on the day. So if it's a draw after full time, there's no penalties, no replay, and there's a Munster final fix for the week after. So what they're going to do instead, they've clarified this week, is that if Crokes draw, Crokes get to go through and they'll play that final after they get knocked out of the championship. They'll push it back entirely. But if he's getting win, Stacks... So Stacks have to... whatever happens this weekend, all Crokes need is a draw to get into a Munster semi-final, and then they'll play the county final in potentially 4 months. But so for like for whatever those two teams, that's really interesting for those teams. But you can imagine Austin Stacks, like they're in such a weird place trying to look ahead to a potentially a Munster semi-final that they don't even know if they're going to be in, and they have to hope that Crokes not only don't win but also don't draw,
and they're hosting the match.
Yeah.
Fix the fixtures.
Fix the fixtures. But sure,
Airog against Saracens. I'm just looking. It's a hard weekend because there are games that are so tight that are impossible to call, and the odds are reflect that. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Kerry
yeah.
final being evens, and then there are other games where you're looking at the likes of whoever it is, Portlaoise, Nemo Rangers, all these, all big. You know, they're all real strong favourites. The two interesting games that caught my eye are Gary Castle against Redhouse and Aero against Sarsfield in the Leinster Championship, because you could see both of these going either way. And even though we started this whole talk about how winning the county titles constantly, and you know the ease at which you win them, and the run in you have to it, and all this is a load of nonsense, I'm going to go for one more week. And Aero are 7-4 to beat Sarsfields. They've got a match already. You know, they've got one done and dusted already in the Leinster Championship. They won their first round. They've won their third, I think, Cardo Senior title in a row. They've got Sean Gannon in there. They've got Jordan Morrissey. They're littered with county players. 7-4 looks like a decent price against Sarsfield in what is Carlo Kildare derby. And we know how Carlo Kildare derbies go in the last couple of years.
Yeah, like it's... Isn't it weird? Like it's really like these. This is the trademark one that we like would straight away be like, oh, like that looks like a big price, and then you're not actually.
It's actually aptly priced, probably.
But you're not even basing it off. Like you're not basing off the teams. You kind of are. Like a lot of times, just looking at the price, like that's generous. Even though you don't know if they're going to win, you're just looking at the price itself. It's worth mentioning on the context of that Ben McCormack and Matthew Byrne. The Sarsfields are without two really good forwards that they've had throughout the year. Like again, just looking at context and that, which I think might lead to, if you're looking for any evidence for that 7-4, I think that might be it.
Yeah, I don't like again. Neither of us have seen or
exactly. Yeah,
I make a doubt you've seen Aero or Sarsfields play in the flesh this year, so it's hard for us to call. But again, you're just looking at odds. The same with Gary Castle and Redhouse. I mean, Gary Castle have got plenty of pedigree in the Leinster Championship, indeed in Dáil Éireann. Redhouse is their first time, I think, winning the Meath Senior Football Championship, or at least the first time in a long time. I think it is the first time overall. They're littered with county players as well, so that's definitely an interesting tie to keep. You know, that's one again that maybe just sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah, and there's like a lot of those games as well. Like we haven't even mentioned the Ballygunner Patrick's Well game, which is the game on TG Carra, as far as I remember. Like that's in the hurling now, on top of Munster hurling. Like that again, Ballygunner, who made light work of 6 Mile Ridge, like Patrick's Well, who came out of a dog of a Limerick championship. Sometimes I wonder, is that actually necessarily that a good thing? Like I look at Thomas's and Mellows and their chances in the hurling championship overall, and it's like they've come through a dog of a Galway County championship this year. Like, the Thomas's were run really close by Tommy Larkins in a quarter final weeks ago. Jason Ford run close. Then like you look at Mellows, Capitoy put it up to them a lot more than I actually thought they would. But like, if I think they might have been comfortable with a couple of minutes left, then it ended up only being a goal. Like they both those teams have come through a slog of a not just, like this is before you talk about going ahead to, you know, potential All Ireland semi final. Like they've come through really, really tough clash there. I wonder how beneficial that is to teams either.
Now look at Niamh Connell and look what they did last weekend after the Donegal Tide championship. But anyway, Morris, thanks for that. But we're going to keep you in studio because you're going to get us hyped for the rugby this weekend. So when you see Trey, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped. You thought the rugby was dying down. It's only just starting. and you're about to get us hyped. Tell us why we have to pay attention. Leinster are playing Connacht this Friday night, and then you've got Munster against Ulster on Saturday night. Are there going to be any Ireland players on show? If there aren't going to be any Ireland players on show, why should we pay attention this early in the season? Who are the players we should be watching out for that are potentially, you know, we've got to pin our hopes on a new generation now. We're looking to 4 years' time. Who can you see maybe that'll start popping up now come the Six Nations?
Yeah.
A few questions there, Morris, for you to sink your teeth into. Take your time.
Quietly, right? Quietly, this... it's actually been an unbelievable couple of weeks for Irish rugby. But in 7 days, England literally fell off the top of the world to descend into their flagship team were in after shit show. They were comprehensively beaten in the World Cup final. But that's not why it's been a good time for Irish rugby. The reason it's been a good time for Irish rugby is, we'll start with, I think, Friday and Connacht. And the Connacht story now is actually brilliant. 4 wins from 5, playing on a really attractive brand of rugby. Jared Butler, who to my mind has actually been the signing of the one of the best signs by any province recently.
He was good in 300, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I was trying to think, where do we know that name from?
I read a stat. So Jared Butler has made, so far this season, 5 games in, 96% of his tackles. Jeez. Rate. I think he's the highest ranked so far. He's just signed a 3-year deal. He's obviously the Connacht captain. In an Irish context, I think he might qualify in a couple of years. He's Australian born, but I don't know how much of an impact he had there. But as a player, he's one of the most underrated back rows in Europe. That'll be an interesting battle looking ahead to this weekend. The reason I'm looking forward to this weekend actually is because, like, you look at two really, really attractive teams, like two teams that are playing absolutely sensational rugby. And then within that, there's enough kind of human, like, that stuff about looking down the line. Like, Butler might not be it, but you look at a Leinster team who, like, this time of year, people really, like, the amount of people, joy that people took in Leinster's 3-0 win over Zebre, which, I mean, was absolutely, like, undeniably awful. But then, you know, they play an absolute thriller against Dragons last week, and you've got guys like Harry Byrne, who starts his Leinster career with a try and looks absolutely, like, perfectly comfortable at this level.
Yeah.
Kelleher, the hooker, who looks, could be a bolter for Ireland now. He's been absolutely sensational for Leinster. Like, what's, you talk about internationals coming back, is Sean Cronin now in trouble when you see a guy like him who's like...
And Ireland need a new hooker.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't just mean because Rory Best is gone. It's like, it's clearly the position that they've least depth in. And, you know, if you want to turn the corner from a World Cup, it's just like the star of the early season
being
a hooker is no harm.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then on top of that, I just mentioned the game last weekend, and you look at James Lowe again scoring tries again. He's just such a delight to watch. And another guy who's going to qualify for Ireland very, very soon. And I actually think that there's no doubt that he'll walk straight into that team. And again, like, that's whatever about, like, sometimes you cast narratives onto the game. It's like, this is like Kelleher's first big interpro. How will he adapt? Is this him setting himself up for Ireland? Like, will we see any of Harry Byrne? Probably not. I think we'll probably see some more press. Butler coming off the back. Tom Farrell, who's been absolutely incredible. Is he putting himself in an Irish context? All that stuff is relevant, right? But the heart of it, at the absolute heart of it, is the fact that this is going to be like a really brilliant matchup. Two teams that play really, really good rugby. And whatever about what will happen elsewhere, I think just the Connacht against Leinster is a game that you should watch because it'll be enjoyable.
Connacht,
I just want to say, like, what Morris is saying there is right, even in terms of, like, we're talking probably too much about what's going to happen with Ireland at the moment. Whereas, like, as I was saying to you at the start of the show, the mad thing here is that the World Cup season is so weird in that you come back from a World Cup ends, it's the pinnacle of the game, and it feels like it should be the end. It just feels like it is, the way it is for the Southern Hemisphere teams. And the fact that there's already rugby starting while it's still on, and now from this week on, it's like, this is normally the time of year that we start paying attention. And to go back to kind of Morris's point there about, like, this being a good game on its own, even there's a middle ground there of looking ahead and looking for this game, and that's the Champions Cup, and it's only a week away, and you're thinking of, what's the Leinster team going to be, what's the Munster team going to be? You know, we've a slightly better idea already what the Connacht and Ulster teams are going to be, but still there's places to be played for. But you look at, like, you know, Harry Byrne, it's probably a year too early for him, but he's on the team. But you know, you're talking about some of these guys, you're talking about, like, Scott Penny, who was like a star
that
for the
entire back row
last
year,
you know, Caelan Doris and Max Deegan, a brilliant young exciting back row. Are they going to make an impact next week when European rugby starts? Because I know you were saying, Mark, sometimes that these things can kind of, like, falter in a little bit, but the rugby season for me is always something that starts very slow. I don't know why it is. I'm not normally paying attention for a while. But there's no room for that this year, because once the Champions Cup starts, you're paying attention.
Yeah, ramped up,
and that's
yeah.
like a week away. You know, yeah. So it's like, it's brilliant that the Irish provinces are playing each other this week, because that's an immediate kind of wake up call, you know?
I have two questions for both of you. First one, Connacht against Leinster on Ladbrokes.com. Connacht are 8-5, Leinster 8-15. Call it.
I'm going to say Connacht as well.
Connacht at 8-5. Write it down, Mick. Yeah. Write that down. What was the film was that in? Write that down. Oh, Van Wilder.
I have to say, one of the best sporting experiences of my life, and this is saying a lot, like, because I've been at bloody millions of things, but I have to be honest and say one of the best sporting experiences of my life was watching Connacht beat Leinster, I think 7-6 in the sports ground, in the windiest day I've ever seen in my entire life, the year that they won the Pro 14. I was in the, what do you call the place in the sports ground where all the Connacht fans stand?
The
shed or the stands, whatever. I was in the middle of all the Connacht ultras and watching it, and it was it was brilliant. It was such Kieran Marmion got a try, and I think Madigan got two penalties, and that's all that happened in the whole game. It was just a class atmosphere. Sports ground's a really hard place for anyone to win. This is a Leinster team only kind of getting started with a really, really young team. I think Connacht will beat them.
My second question, Munster are 2-7 against Ulster, so they're probably going to win it, but on the handicap on Ladbrokes.com is Munster -9 at 10-11. Will they beat the handicap?
I think they might, you know, like the Munster story.
Mick's shaking his head here.
I'm going with Morris though.
The Munster story right now is actually interesting. Like, I saw I think that if you look at their 2018 versus 2019 form, right, they're like, they've actually scored less tries, maybe conceded more, and have scored less points, obviously. Like, so they've, like, basically, like, if you look at, I think they, this in 2019, they've scored 18 tries and conceded 10. In 2018, last year, they scored 25 over the first couple of games and conceded 9. So straight away, I think people would latch on to that and be like, oh, sure, like, Munster have dipped off from where they are last year. And then, like, I think that might be a tad lazy analysis, particularly when you talk about how good the Cheetahs have been this year. Munster have already played them. Cardiff Blues put up a really good fight. You've got a Munster team without, like, their spine, basically, versus last year when they had, like, Kilcoyne, Carberry, all these players were there, Keith Earls. And then on top of that as well, you're actually embedding in a new coaching structure. So you've got Graham Rowntree, like, was at the World Cup with Georgia. He's there, 2 weeks now. Stephen Larkham only came in pre-season. Like, that is going to take time. So I don't, like, you know, just, like, there's, you know, stats don't lie, but sometimes they actually do. Like, you have to look at the context to it as well. I think Munster have been really impressive so far this season. Looking ahead to the weekend, if you're talking about, like, you want to see emerging players and you see the likes of, like, Munster still have the same, I don't know, have they the same, like, young, like, Weasley, we talked about him last year, Nash is a guy we're kind of familiar with. On top of that, then, you look at players who've started so far this year, JJ Hanrahan, Albie Matthewson, there is not, you know, the young guy that everyone, yeah, like, that is everyone excited about. But I don't know if that's a bad thing either. Like, that degree of continuity probably helps a rugby team, even if, like, they're learning new strike plays, which they have to be if Larkham's in there as well. Your pack is learning, like, trying to, they're building on what they did last year, which are already very solid. Like, so, sometimes, like, I don't think Munster, by any stretch of imagination, would have sat down at the end of last year and said, we need to tear up the script. Like, I don't think that wouldn't have been a conversation. I think they certainly would have recognised flaws in their attacking game, but elsewhere, I don't think that. So, like, I think that degree of continuity probably helps. And then, you know, you're looking ahead to a game this weekend, I actually think that they are in a really strong place going into that.
Look, you've got me suitably hyped, and some good predictions for the weekend as well. If you are having a bet, be sure, on either rugby or the GA, be sure to gamble responsibly and visit dunlewy.net for more information. Before we go, we're going to get Mick's NFL picks, which you might stay around for hours because I think this weekend he's going to need some help. Mick, you said you were going to talk about it later on in the show. Now is your time. You had one win, one loss and one push.
Yeah. So started off grand in the London game. Houston didn't. I had them -1.5 against the Jags, and it was handy enough that was over after a few minutes. I think the Jags only got 3 points in the whole game, so I was feeling good then. And I had nothing in the 6 o'clock games, and I'm like, oh, to wait around all evening. And all I could think about was I wanted to go 3-0 straight away. Anyway, everything went wrong. Tampa Bay started scoring at will against Seattle, who I had -6, and Green Bay literally just didn't show up against the Chargers. It was weird. They were absolutely hammered. So that was gone. But then I went to bed, and then I got up the next morning and I saw that I was trying not to check the score. And I said, I'm just going to watch the Seahawks game, because they maybe did it. So I'm sort of skipping through.
Over Seahawks, you had them
-6, and then it went to overtime, and I'm like, oh.
And that doesn't count. So, like, say, you know, the way it's like -6 in a normal.
The final score is what counts in the NFL. So here's the problem with overtime: is each team gets one possession unless a team gets a touchdown. So that it does encourage a touchdown, but generally a field goal will win it. You know, a field goal, especially if you have the second possession, will win it. So I'm thinking there's not much chance here until the Seahawks get a touchdown to win it in overtime and get me my first push of the year. So it was a 1-1-1 year that I thought that week that I thought was a 1-2. I thought it was going to be a disaster. In fact, it's a push of a week in general, and it pushes me up to 12-8-1 for the season. So still a decent enough record. Not bad. You know.
Explain to me your push.
Basically, it's a no bet. So no, if I've had an individual bet on that game, then you get the stake back for it. Yeah. So it's a handicap draw.
There were a lot of tight games that I don't think we were expecting them to be that tight last weekend. This weekend is going to be really difficult to call as well. Hence, you're in here as well, Morris. Mick, are you up to scratch?
I don't know, and I'm happy enough for Morris to. I'll tell you what, Morris. I've got 3 bets here, right, and I'm happy enough to put my record on the line, this 12-8-1 record for the year, and give you a veto and a change on one of those bets.
Okay.
You've come in here
if you want it. I'm happy you can say it either.
You've come in here as GA and rugby expert and now also have been, you can add a title to your name, which is NFL consultant.
Okay, yeah, I'm good with that. Do you want to tell me your picks first, and then I can...
Exactly, yeah. I'll go through the picks, and then you can have a look and see if there's something that catches your eye a little bit more, and I'll give you the honour of ditching one of these, because it is a tough, tough week again, and this is just constant at this time of year. They figure out the spreads, they understand the teams, and they just become very hard to deal with. Plus, there's just a lot of middling teams in the NFL this year, and they're just sort of...
6 teams on a bye as well this week, which isn't helping either.
Exactly, and we've got no bets on the Kansas City game either, because we don't know whether Patrick Mahomes is going to be ready, so there's no prices. So then you're thinking, basically, you're taking 8 teams out of the equation completely. The first thing I'm going to go for is a bit of a risk, right? Because it is more than the usual kind of like one with the spread bet that is basically about evens or 10-11, and it actually comes as 1.46-1. I've basically taken, there's 2 big favorites this week that I do fancy to win, but I'm just a little bit worried about the spread. So I've taken an alternate handicap on both of them on Ladbrokes, and I've done it as a double. Okay, and that's the Ravens away to the 0-7 or maybe even 0-8 Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
They're minus 10, I think, on the spread, but I've got them at -6.5. Just to kind of, you know, take it that they win by a touchdown, just in case, because they're away from home. These things can get a little bit messy sometimes. The Ravens are coming off beating the Patriots as well, having had a bye week, and before that beating the Seahawks in Seattle. So they're on an unbelievable run. This guy, Lamar Jackson, is a superstar, but it's such an obvious kind of crash game that they might just kind of like falter their way. So I want to take the other thing is then the New Orleans Saints, who I told you to make sure I bet on this week after. They're back from bye week. However, they're -12.5 at home to the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons have been awful this year, but they've been a surprise awful. And the talent that's there, they've no Matt Ryan, the quarterback's out, they've had other injuries in their secondary, everything like that. The worry I always have with Atlanta is it's a divisional game, they hate each other, they're 2 teams that always play in the dome. Like, Atlanta could just do it one week, because they've got the talent to do it there. However, I'm very confident New Orleans will win. I just think -12 is too much, so I've bumped that down to -8, and a double of the 2 of them, -8 for the Saints, -6.5 for the Ravens, is 1.46-1. But I'll just put it as a normal pick bet for the 2 of them. Is that all right?
I really like that. Okay. I think that's like the...
It's a bit safe.
Yeah. Well,
but,
yeah.
But then doubling it up makes it dangerous.
Yeah. And like there is, like, you mentioned those kind of trash teams that can rally, like the Dolphins last week were case in point that you nod as knowingly, but like
Dolphins beat the Jets last week. We assumed the Dolphins were going 0-16.
The midst of a tank season. Yeah,
what's going on with the Jets?
Oh my god, the Jets are gone to the dogs. Like,
it's comical. Like, so much of that game was so weird to get, you know, beat by a team who fired you must be pretty humiliating. And then you,
like, yeah, for the coach, Adam Gase. Yeah,
and then
yeah.
Do you see there's a really good image of his entire bench leaving him. He's just sitting on the sideline by himself, like looking down at a sheet, but kind of clueless. Like, and it's the Pats, like the for those who don't know, the Jets played the Patriots earlier this season, and put all this hype at a really young quarterback, a guy who like might be emerging, I guess. Aaron Donald came out after
Sam
the game, said after the game that he's seeing ghosts, and since then has gone to pieces. And they just keep doing it. They keep destroying young quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. 33-0, I think. I don't think the Jets scored against the Patriots in both of the games this year, which is remarkable. But I'm not picking the Jets. The Patriots are on a bye week. I think the Jets might be as well. But they badly need it. But the other,
they're playing. They're playing the Giants.
They're playing the Giants. Yeah, the New York Derby. My God, two awful teams. Speaking of New York, though, Western New York and Mark's beloved Buffalo Bills.
I had looked it up because I was like, he's not going to mention the Buffalo Bills, and I'm going to say, why in the name of God are the Cleveland Browns favorites against the Buffalo Bills when they're like way down? The Browns won two games
they're
so far
in 2-6, yeah, and they're. They're as bad as that.
The worst coach in the world.
We're talking about Atlanta. Yeah, like Freddie Kitchens is the worst coach in the world. It's so funny. They were playing the Patriots a couple of weeks ago, and he did two challenges that were two of the stupidest things I've ever seen. It was like he didn't understand the rules. It'd be like you coaching, Mark, and you knew that you could throw this challenge flag twice a game, and there was a little bit of everyone was watching the replay, and you didn't know. Is that all right? Did he get over the line there? Oh, I don't know. And you panicked and threw the flag. It was like he's never watched the NFL before in his life. It was absolutely remarkable. He's the worst coach I've ever seen. They're 2-6 despite supposedly having this good team. We talked about them preseason, and we actually talked you down off the Browns, and you took up the Bills instead, myself and Donnie. Well, they're playing each other this week.
Mark Derby.
The Bills are a very, very good professional team. I think they will make the playoffs at this stage. I don't think they'll make much of an impact on the playoffs, but I can see them beating the Browns. They're +3. It's in Cleveland. I don't think Cleveland have won a game in that stadium this year. I'm pretty sure they haven't won a home game, actually. Their two games have been won on the road. And I can't understand it. Would I be surprised if Cleveland somehow put it all together and beat the Bills? Not really. But if you're going by probability, to have the 3 points there for the Bills is, I think, a gift, I have to say.
Especially coming off the back of a week where 12.5% of the teams that won in the NFL had an Allen quarterback.
And all of them won.
I think that in terms of Bills, that's Allen number one. And then you kind of move down from there. Like he's the chief Allen at this stage of the season, as Mark knows.
Oh, yeah. Or the Bill Allen. Would you change your name to Bill if you were a Bills quarterback?
I'd change your name to Buffalo. Buffalo is a lot better than Damien Comer, the Buffalo.
So I've two there, and I think Morris likes them both so far, so we'll see if he goes. But here's what I'll give you one. We mentioned the Dolphins. This is one I'm not going for, but just in case you're thinking, right, the Dolphins didn't beat the spread, I think, for the first 6 weeks of the season, or maybe their first five games or something like that, which is a new record, and it was insane. They've beaten the spread every week since, and they actually won a game this week. They are showing a little bit of life and feistiness, right? Now, I still don't think they're not a good, and they're not going to really win too many more games, but they're at the Colts this week. Now, the Colts, we talked about being a crazy crackpot team last week. Well, they lost Jacoby Brissett, their quarterback. I don't know if he's going to miss a couple of games. I'm pretty sure he's out this week, though. And isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're playing now with Brian Hoyer, who's like a celebrity backup. Like, he was Tom Brady's backup last season, and he's just always kind of gone around the league for years, but he's no good. He's an interception machine, like, you know. And he's starting for them this week. They're injured, their best receiver's out, and the Dolphins are +10.5, so the Colts could still go out and beat them well, and the Dolphins could still cover here. So I find it really hard to bet on a bad team. And that's the problem there. So instead, I've gone for the Packers, who let me down. They were awful. They didn't show up at all in LA last week. But they have been good up until now. And they're -5 at home to Carolina. I don't like this pick, actually. I don't like this pick. I'm changing it on the fly. Talk me out of the Dolphins. I'm not doing the Packers.
I don't know if I can talk you out of the Dolphins.
The last time I talked somebody out of the Dolphins was when Donnie was on the podcast instead of you, Mick. He had the Dolphins with the handicap. I lambasted him for saying
they were playing the Redskins, though.
Yeah.
Not the Colts. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But then I talked him out of it. He went the opposite. He went the Colts to beat the, to beat the spread.
Redskins.
And, or sorry, the Redskins beat the spread, and the Dolphins went and won.
Like, saying the Packers and Carolina out loud, even though the Packers are at home and have been good at home this year, Carolina are just like, they've a lot of talent on that team. They're a good team. Cam Newton's out for the season now. That was announced yesterday. So they're stuck with another Allen, Kyle Allen.
At a number two.
But yeah, but he's been hit and miss. But he's had good games and they've won a lot of games with him there. They've just struggled in the last couple of weeks. But no, I think I'm going with Miami.
Yeah, like... I kind of agree with you. Like, the Aaron Rodgers interview I thought was really interesting. It was the first time you're kind of seeing a star quarterback like not make excuses, but like shift focus to his young coach and kind of like, so like for those, the Packers arrived 2 days early. Usually they arrive on a Saturday night. They arrive on a Friday night. He brought that up as maybe a reason, like sort of stuff like this in terms of play calls and stuff like that as well. I saw Skip Bayless compared him to the LeBron James of the NFL, and that he always makes excuses. It's never his fault when he loses. But it makes it like, which is just
these
like
dickheads on Ray. Talking head, basically. Literally, not only is he having a go at Aaron Rodgers, but he tries to throw LeBron James in there, two of America's best ever athletes. What an asshole.
It's at one level you take it, and you, like, I was like hysterically laughing when I saw it. Like, he also had this thing about Matt Moore, the Kansas City quarterback, who we don't know is going to play this week. And the sentence started, I'm not saying Matt Moore is better than Patrick Mahomes, but, and I started, I was like, where is this going? Like, I would have similar doubts about what I kind of like the Dolphins as well.
You're not going to change any
I don't think so. The only one I kind of do like as well, like the, you know, you talk about like a make or break games and what it means, like the Lions against the Bears and where they're going as well. I think they're the Lions plus two and a half.
Away to the Bears.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about that that I just that me is too. Is calling out to me a small bit. But I
you can ditch one of those three.
I kind of like a bit of Fitzmagic. I think I like the Miami pick.
Okay, I can't believe I'm picking Miami. And when we're here next Wednesday, Mark, and talking about this match, and they get beaten 42-0. You can remind me that I often had a rule to say never pick the worst team to beat the spread. But
there we have it, late drama.
Fitzmagic, yeah. We go with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
That's the thing about...
You know what? It's something for people to watch on Red Zone on Sunday if you go with me here, because this will be a bit of crack.
Exactly. And Mick has sold it perfectly there as well, because Fitzpatrick is the man to sell it on, because it'll go one or two ways. Like, he will shoot the lights out, or this will be tank, 50 points.
There we have it. Late change, late trauma. Here on the podcast.
I'll run through it very, very quickly before we wrap, just so I have it all together. So it's a double of alternative handicaps of the Ravens -6.5 and the Saints -8. Then separately, just normal handicaps, Bills +3, separate bet with Miami +10.5.
And if you are having any bets on the NFL or indeed any of the sports we talked about on this weekend's or this week's podcast, be sure to gamble responsibly and visit dunlewy.net for more information. Thank you very much to everyone for listening. If you have not subscribed yet, please do research. You can search Balls.ie podcast, or indeed the Build Up on Balls.ie, if you just want to subscribe to this podcast alone on all good podcast apps. When you have subscribed, please rate and review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts. Scroll down to the bottom of our feed. You see we can leave a 5-star rating and a review. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us what you like about the show, where we can improve, and tell us how great we are really in general. But until next week, mind yourself, and thank you very much for listening.